And we're live. I'd like to hear that. Hey, all you crazy sci-fi and fantasy fans. It's time for your daily dose of shenanigans over here at the Blasters and Blades podcast. Just a couple of nerdy veterans and one chaos coordinator geeking out over our science fiction passions and fantastical fantasies. A place where magic is king, the sky is the limit, and space is the place. We are the podcast that puts the fun in dysfunction. So without further ado, first we'll address the elephant in the room. Stabby is on a stabbing sabbatical, and since she couldn't be here because her knife is too dull, we brought in the soulless Ginger to cover. I mean, figure it's about the same, right?
Works for me.
All right. So you all know who John is. He's been on the show like a bazillion times. That's like metric bazillion, though, not an imperial nonsense. But Mr. Graham Nolan, for people who don't know who you are, can you introduce yourself to our listeners and viewers at home?
Sure. I'm a writer, artist, publisher of comic books. I've been in this business for 40 years. I worked on, I was a senior Batman illustrator for, how long was that? 6 years, something like that. Co-created Bane. Now I self-publish my own books under my own company, Compass Comics. And it's all I ever wanted to do from the time I was 12 years old. I had no plan B. And so here I am 40 years later, still doing it.
Nailing it. Outstanding. I mean, that's some going. I guess at this point, everyone who said you wouldn't make it can like kick rocks, right? I'm proving them wrong.
There were quite a few. How I'd put it.
I know when you're in the creative world, like everyone always assumes you'll never be able to make a living at it. Oh, you know, you'll never do that. Get a fallback plan, right? That's the be it artist, musician, or sports player. They tell you all that. So when you get to this point, you know, to be able to just say, haha, I showed you.
Yeah, my mom was a teacher, and so she was very supportive. My dad was a homicide detective in New York, and he was much more grounded. And, you know, when I told him I wanted to be a, you know, work in comic books, he looked at me like I had a third eye, you know. he was like, look, if you don't want to go to college, learn a trade, become a plumber or something like that, you know. And I was like, no, this is what I want to do. And, you know, so I got the last laugh.
Did you go the art school route, or is it all self-taught?
No, I went for a couple of years to the Joe Kubert School.
Okay.
You know, I took college art courses at community college, stuff like that, and then, you know, self-taught along the way. But the Kubert School really helped a lot. You know, they taught me the business of comics. They taught me the work ethic needed. And help to enhance my skills.
Always a win. All right, before we dive into the Indiegogo that brought us here, I use Kickstarter like people use Kleenex as just generic for crowdfunding, but people get really upset if you get it wrong. So correct me, and I'll try. I'll try really hard.
Coke, Pepsi, McDonald's, Burger King, Marvel, DC.
All right, do you have a preference, Coke or Pepsi?
Coke. No. It used to be Coke, but now it's Woca-Cola. So I went to Pepsi.
All right. Burger King or McDonald's? I mean, these are important questions, Nick. I know we're
deep. McDonald's.
Excellent choice. All right. Krispy Kreme or Dunkin'?
None.
Nick, you didn't tell me he was a heretic.
Hey, when it comes to donuts, everyone's got their own preference. I respect them all.
All right. So for the religion questions, now we got the important stuff out of the way. Star Wars, Star Trek, or Firefly?
Star Trek, TOS.
Okay. What made that special for you? What made it stick out?
The writing was so great, and the performance of William Shatner's Captain Kirk was just amazing. You know, I still look at it and I marvel at, especially that first season. You know, there was a lot of nuance to his character. And it went into the second season. Third season, they changed producers, and there was a lot of stuff that went on. And he got a little out of control, a little hammy in places. But the guy was a master. He was great.
Did you like the first few episodes where they had Captain Pike before, obviously, they moved to Shatner?
Well, just one. It was the cage, yeah. Which was the first pilot. Yeah. It was okay. I could see why they didn't pick it up. You know, Pike was somewhat not likable. But it was interesting when they did the second pilot, Where No Man Has Gone Before. Shatner's Kirk was fully realized right from there. You know, when they did the next episode or the first episode of the series, the Corbomite maneuver, Kirk is dead on. You know, he's got it, and the character was locked down. Whereas in a lot of shows, you see the character evolve and change, or, you know, in, like Spock, for example. Spock was different in the cage than he was in No Man where No Man Has Gone Before. To the Corbomite maneuver, he was different in that too, and then he started to lock in his character. But Captain Kirk was right there from the get go, which was really cool.
Yeah, right out the chute.
Mm-hmm.
Just nailing it.
Okay, I don't know why I thought there were two episodes with Pike, but you're right. I think it was just the pilot. But either way, the uniforms were different too. That I remember.
Yep.
Which was kind of neat as well.
Yeah.
It had some Forbidden Planet vibes to the uniforms in the beginning.
Oh, yeah, the whole transporter thing was like from Forbidden Planet. It wasn't a transporter, but they had those tubes that they stood in, and they had the sparkly stuff, and that was a big influence on Roddenberry, on the look of Star Trek, was Forbidden Planet.
All right, and because we are polytheistic, no answers are forbidden. Game of Thrones, The Wheel of Time, or Chronicles of Narnia?
None of them.
Okay, what would be your fantasy of choice?
I'm not really a fantasy guy. I like if you're talking about books, or if it's books, then I love Robert E. Howard stuff. The Conan books.
Okay.
If you're talking movies, I like the Lord of the Rings movies.
Okay. Well, that's the reason we picked the properties we do, which kind of limited us. We wanted ones that were available on multiple platforms, so that way we didn't have to limit our audience. Because we focus on speculative fiction, not how they consume it. All of that's valid. So, all right, now this is a very important one, because sadly, when you grow up, people stop asking you this question. So we are bringing it back. What is your favorite dinosaur, Graham?
Triceratops. What else?
Excellent answer. It's a very popular one. What makes that stick out for you? Was it some cartoon or movie or book that did it for you?
No, you know, I used to read these encyclopedias when I was a kid, all about the dinosaurs, like every other four-year-old kid, you know, five-year-old kid, whatever. I always thought the Triceratops was the good guy, you know, and the Tyrannosaurus was the bad guy, you know. So I put him in those black and white squares, and I always thought the Triceratops, you know, could stand up to him. And then my brother and I had these little battery-operated like walking dinosaurs that had like a wire to them, and you could press the button, make them walk. And we had them face off all the time. And my Triceratops would always push his T-Rex off the table. So I was always a pro T-Rex guy, or pro Triceratops guy.
That's an excellent answer. Did you cheat to make it win, or were you just that good?
No. The Triceratops always kick his ass. So, you know.
Yeah, it's just the way it was meant to be.
Real life, man.
Yeah.
All right. And because we are civilized human beings here and no longer knuckle dragging troglodytes, coffee or tea, and how do you take it?
Well, I'm an American. I drink coffee.
Outstanding answer. Tea is meant to be served two ways, iced and sweet, because I'm from the South, or in a harbor.
In a harbor. Yeah, I like that one. I like it with heavy cream in it. If I can't have heavy cream, I just drink it black.
Okay. All right. And so we were going to do
this. This is why I love him.
Originally, this was going to be the Batman and Beyond with his buddy Chuck Dixon. A little bit about Batman. Hey, yeah, he stood us up. A little bit about Batman and then beyond to the project you're working on. But since you were here and he was a no-show, we found out you had an Indiegogo going on today about returning to Monster Island. So, yep. Nick, can you show that the Kickstarter page that you've got?
Sure prepped? Can. Bring it up and, right now, sir.
And can you tell us? Can you tell us about this project?
Sure. Why don't you play the video first?
Oh, Nick.
Oh, yeah.
Roll that beautiful bean footage.
Rolling.
And there we go. Yeah, this is a sequel to my original Monster Island, which came out in 1998. Everybody still there?
Yeah, I forgot to unmute. We mute when the video is covered. Does it pick up exactly where the last one left off, or does you have a time lapse?
It starts off exactly where it ended, and then there's a, because the original was done as a black and white, and so the first page is black and white to tell you that, you know, it's picked up right where we ended off, and then we snap to color, and now 2 years have passed, and our characters are still in the Navy, and the island returns. Monster Island returns. Monster Island is a repository, is what it is, and it's run by these capitalists called the Gooch, and they go around the universe collecting monsters off of planets because they're pains in the asses, and they expect to be paid for that, you know, to house them on this island, and they ended up on Monster Island originally, or they ended up on Earth originally because there was a coup within the Gooch, and our heroes get stuck on there, and they got to restore order and get off the island before it phases out to another part of the universe. Well, 2 years later, the island returns. This time it's hovering above the Bering Sea, and the Russians send their pilots out, and the Navy, our guys, send our heroes out. They get shot down and land on the island again, and now something else is going on over there, and they have to right things again, and beat the Russians to the fact that they're trying to steal alien tech and get off the island in time. So it's basically an all ages, you know, throwback fun adventure comic, which, you know, was like a send up of Jack Kirby Monster Comics and Roy Crane Adventure Tales, the like Buzz Sawyer, Milton Caniff, Terry and the Pirates type stuff.
Yeah, the classic fun stories in comics.
Yeah. Yeah, there's no polemics. There's no messages other than, you know, pure adventure and fun.
It reminded me of cartoons of me watched when I was a kid.
Like a Johnny Quest type thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, oh, yeah. People have made that comparison. That it has kind of a Johnny Quest vibe to it. And I'll take that because that was a great cartoon.
I love Johnny Quest. All right. Mm-hmm. I had to give you some of my hard-earned money on your campaign, sir.
Beautiful. Hard-earned. Love your hard-earned money.
Don't spend it all in one place, sir.
I don't know how hard-earned it was. Yeah. So you can get your heavy whipping cream.
Yeah.
So you don't have to drink it black like us, you know, knuckle draggers.
So I know you're an artist, but do you also write the stories, or do you have an
No, I write. I'm a writer and artist.
Okay. Where did the idea for this universe, the Monster Island and all that, come from?
Well, it came from the Jack Kirby Monster Comics and the Roy Crane stuff that I mentioned. The idea of doing an all ages comics came about because I didn't like the direction the corporate comics were going, even back in 1998. I was under contract with DC, and they would send me everything they published. And my daughters were young at the time, and I couldn't give them these comics to read because they were either overly violent or overly sexualized. And I decided I want to write a throwback style comic that they could read and that my friends could read and enjoy on an adult level as well. So, I took the idea of the old newspaper strips where everybody in America used to read them, kids and adults, and use that as a blueprint, and then threw in science fiction and monsters and stuff like that into it. And so that was the genesis of it.
Okay. I don't know how to top that. That sounds pretty fun. And I appreciate that you're trying to make a product that is family friendly. That can be sometimes hard to find in certain spaces.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So what would you say the rating? You mentioned that you wanted to be able to show your kids. Would you say it's PG-13, just PG? Like, what would you rate this?
PG at worst. Maybe because of the action in it. But yeah, definitely. It's definitely for all ages. And any kid could read it.
That's awesome. I can't wait to get it.
So is it already done, or is the Indiegogo funding the creation? I know some people, you know, finish it and then they do the campaign. Some people.
This one is done. Typically, it's not. Typically, you get started on it after the funding is done. But this one is done. The files are just about ready to go. So it'll be a relatively quick turnaround. September is the listed date for fulfillment on it. But that's only because dealing with printer issues, you know, I hedge my bets. But likely it'll ship long before that.
All right. Well, getting into my hands earlier is always better than later. Getting in the reader's hands.
So I know some comics, I've learned this through Nick, some of the comics will have special covers if you back like at a certain level. Is that something you're doing, or are you going with a standard cover?
Well, no, there's variant covers on this as well. There's stretch goals, which we've hit already, so that everybody benefits from it. When we hit 90,000, everybody's going to get an Escape from Monster Island mini print. There's been upgrades in paper, upgrades in printing techniques on it. And when we hit the 100,000 mark, which is about 8,000 away, an 8-page story, an extra 8 pages is going in that I'm doing called Kirby's Cigar. And it's a short story that's sort of a satire and indictment and an indictment at the same time of the comic book industry.
I wish I had the $2,000 for that one.
Oh, the commission level. Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah. You're already proving, you know, if you listen to conventional wisdom on the talking heads that go on the various entertainment news, they would tell you that comics were dead and you can't really make money at it. But between you and the Ripaverse, you're kind of proving that there are people out there that still want to read stuff.
Oh yeah, the corporate comics have ostracized an entire generation of readers that are craving good stories, good entertainment, mm-hmm. fun, excitement. They don't want to be lectured to. They don't want to hear your shit. So that's what I'm doing. I'm filling a niche. You know, nature abhors a vacuum, and there's a vacuum right now. And I'm poised to jump into it. And, you know, I've created this universe that this is like the sixth or seventh book that I've done. And, you know, I'm not doing superheroes. This is all a supernatural sci-fi monster universe. Like the one I'm doing with Chuck, Joe Frankenstein is part of this. I just finished Ghosts of Matacumba Key, which is we're fulfilling that right now. And then I had Alien Alamo, which was a sci-fi Western. And then the Shenu, which was, that was a straight up rated R horror tale.
Ooh.
So yeah, if you like that kind of, you know, modern day straight up horror, the Shenu is for you.
Oh yeah. Me and Stabby are huge horror fans.
Oh, cool.
So
like, and all the previous published books of mine all go up on the Compass Comics website. Once backers are fulfilled, then they'll go up on the website. So the only one that's not up there is obviously Return to Monster Island, because that's still live. And the Ghost of Matacumba Key, because we're still fulfilling that. So I don't sell to anybody until my backers are completed.
I have the same philosophy. Before I put anything on my website.
Yeah, it's kind of shitty if you do it the other way around.
Right, or you sell it at cons and backers haven't gotten their stuff yet.
Oh, yeah, that's out. Kiss of death.
Yeah, you try to stay away from that. What I really like is that it's getting away from superheroes, capes, and cowls. I think there's probably a little bit of fatigue going on with superheroes right now, mainly because of the MCU. Going back to adventure tales is what really intrigues me about this. I remember, you know, reading older comics that my dad kept. You know, so I read like The Lone Ranger and The Shadow. You know, Sandman, the original Sandman. So I loved, and I'm a huge fan of noir too. So there's, I'm actually seeing that starting to come back. I'm a huge fan of that. And what's good, because superheroes will get their turn in the cycle again, but I really want to see more of this. You know, the action adventure, the damsel in distress, the crazy monsters.
Yeah.
You know, it looks like you've got everything going on here in that book.
Oh, yeah. And romance.
and romance.
Yeah.
Action romance.
You know, it's I want to explore genres that nobody else is doing, stuff that I used to love. I was a monster kid long before I was a comic book kid. I got into it when my mom let me watch Frankenstein Meets the Wolfman when I was like 7 years old, something like that. Awesome. And I just freaked out, you know. I was like, oh my God, this is so cool. And then I discovered comics, and there's an intersection between those two things. At least there used to be back in the 70s. So I, you know, if you were into monsters, you eventually got into comics, and that was the route I took, you know. And now I get to come back and do monster comics, which is really cool.
Yeah, you get to do everything you wanted to do. The stuff that inspired you, were you a huge Frankenstein fan, or like, who's your favorite monster?
Frankenstein. 1931 Karloff version.
Yes.
Yeah, that's the
original.
Best.
My friends of ours, like they tried to make him look more horrifying. I'm like, you can't. I remember first time watching. I used to watch every Saturday morning on AMC growing up. They would play the Universal Monsters. So that's what exposed me to that. So
sure.
First one I watched right out the gate was, you know, Frankenstein. And then Dracula after that, and then it was The Mummy, and then they started going into some of the other stuff like Cat's Eye, you know, that later on the 1940s stuff, still Karloff and Lugosi and all that. But
the pre-code stuff is the best, you know, the pre-code stuff, you know, which is pre 1939, right?
Yeah.
Something like that.
The Comics Authority Code that like nobody knows what
the Hayes Commission. You look at those pre-code movies like King Kong. You know, where you see Fay Wray's boob, you know.
there's a lot of charm to those movies.
Yeah.
Just a little bit of boob.
Good stuff.
Wow, that's
really awesome. When I was a kid, when I was a kid, I go to the library. I would get books on the Universal Monsters. Wolfman was always my favorite, but before I really got into comic books, I was the same way. I was all about monsters.
Yeah, and I love Godzilla too. The original Godzilla.
Yeah.
You know, it was for giant monsters, that one was my favorite. But for like human sized, you know, Frankenstein was my favorite.
Yeah. I've done a few of these interviews, especially with comic book professionals, either on this show or, you know, at cons, you know, because I'm inquisitive. I want to know more about what made them tick. And I'm finding that there's like a universal thing amongst all of us, you know, especially guys that are 40 and older. We all love the Universal Monsters. We love drawing. That was probably our first, you know, couple of notebooks or drawing books was filled with those monsters. And then trying to create your own monster. And then at some point we discover comic books. We're like, oh, this is cool. All right. And then we start drawing our comic books. So no, it's really cool to see that.
And then Star Trek. That was the next one. That was monsters, comics, and Star Trek. In that order.
Yeah, I didn't really. I mean, I got into Star Trek much later in life. It wasn't one of my like core memories in the beginning of like how I got into creative stuff. But Star Wars was mine. Because I was born in 78, I think I remember seeing Return of the Jedi in 83, and then I was hooked with science fiction stuff. even though that's more of a space opera and more fantasy. But
I took a girl to see Empire Strikes Back, and this is pre-internet. You know, nobody knows anything. And we're sitting in the movie theater, and the movie's about to start. And she turns to me and she goes, "I just can't believe that Darth Vader is Luke's father." I'm like, "What? Are you what kidding? The hell?
How do you know this? I haven't even seen this yet."
Needless to say, that was our last date.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Let's back to the streets with you. Oh man. That is insane. Oh, no, and nobody, you guys walked out of the theater unscathed?
She got out alive.
She got out alive. We lost a lot of good men that day. That is crazy. Yeah, we're really enjoying that Indiegogo, the artwork.
Yeah, there's pages, there's art pages further down.
Oh, what did I do? You would think I don't know technology at all. I'm shutting things down, I'm not supposed to. All right. That's great stuff. Bring it back up.
Well, while he's trying not to break the internet, what would you say your art inspiration is as an artist?
There's a lot. There's a lot of inspiration. I mean, I loved Kirby. I liked Romita. I liked Buscema. And then I discovered, you know, Joe Kubert and Alex Toth and Roy Crane. And then the strip guys. You know, I take a little from here and a little from there. You know, the stuff I like that they do. And then the stuff that I don't like that they do, I don't use. So...
Yeah. Oh, yeah, you build your toolkit.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I have, like, when Nightfall came out, I tried to recreate pretty much every page in the whole series, you know, because...
Oh, yeah, I used to copy my favorites. I think you're on the wrong page now. I think you hit the comment section.
Yeah, I got to the... Hold on, let me get back to story.
I'm gonna find there it. You go.
Okay. Tell me where to go, sir.
Just go straight down towards the bottom. You'll see there's like 10 pages of the original art from the inside to give people a taste of the story. There we go. That's the first page. There we go. Yeah. So, you know, it takes place right after they got picked up by the submarine in the first book. It's black and white, like the original. And if, you know, when you read the dialogue, you know, it sounds like a little weird. But then you realize when you scroll to the next page that scroll down. Further? There we go. He's dreaming.
Okay.
Yeah. And now here we are 2 years later. And
right there. 2 years.
I like where he's waking up.
Yeah.
It ain't bad.
It's not bad. That looks kind of like a... Yeah, La Jolla, almost.
It is. It's Coronado Island.
Yeah. Right down the... Well, I used to live in Imperial Beach. I moved out east into the hills. But, yeah, that's... I love it when I can recognize, like, parts of where I lived in a comic book. It makes
that's me feel cool. More connected with it. Means I did my research.
Oh, yeah. Did a great job. Yeah, you nailed that. With the black and white, with the first Monster Island, was that an artistic choice? Was that done on purpose? Was it?
Yeah, it was done because, as I said, I loved the Roy Crane Buzz Sawyer strips, and I wanted it to look like that. And Roy used to use something called Duo Shade. It was a board. This is not Duo Shade. This is because when I did this, Duo Shade no longer exists. So I had to recreate it in Photoshop. But used to be able to draw right on the board in pen and ink. And then you'd see these light blue lines and you'd apply these two different chemicals to bring out them as black lines so that you could make, you know, two different shades, which made the artwork print ready, which was really important back then. Cause then otherwise you'd have to have, plates made for the different colors. you have to have stuff screened to be able to print. This is going back a long time now, and with Photoshop, printing techniques are completely different. So I did it that way so that it would be easier to print, be less expensive to print, and it would also be reminiscent of the Roy Crane stuff.
It does take you back to that feel.
So when I did the modern one, I wanted it to be more modern and be, full color.
Okay. And the artwork's great. Which is not surprising.
And here comes the Navy. The big stick. That's the USS Theodore Roosevelt.
Oh, wow.
Have you been honored to draw, or did you just use pictures as reference?
Just use pictures for reference. But I do a lot of research. You know, it was interesting. When I did the first book, the Navy Interceptor was the Tomcat, which was a two-seater. And now they use the F-18, which is typically a one-seater. And I needed to get the two of them together. So there is a... I researched it and I found out there's a modified F-18, which is called a Growler, and it's a radar jamming plane. And so I had them get into the Growler so they could be in the same plane together when it gets shot down.
Well, I mean, it goes to show you, research is king. It's like, I need this to happen in this story. I need these two people to be together when it gets shot down. There's got to be something out there for me.
Yeah. Like, yeah. I also, I talked to a buddy of mine that was in the Navy, and, when that helicopter comes, originally I had him say, oh, yeah, here comes the chopper. And he goes, no, the Army calls them choppers. The Navy calls them helos.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, that's good intel. Okay.
Yeah.
That is not something I picked up on, too. I would have called it the wrong one, clearly.
Yeah.
Well, I used to call them birds.
I heard about the birds, early birds too. Yeah, the birds. But that's because of an era. The bird is the word. We grew up with that, so. So do you plan on doing a third volume of this? Since clearly
that's third one at the towards the end of the year, I'll do another Indiegogo for the next one, which is Escape from Monster Island.
Okay. So
that'll be the third part of this trilogy.
That seems like the natural title course.
So at any point in time, do the people that are stuck there get to eat a monster? I mean, I want to know what kind of steak they're making.
I haven't done that yet, but I still got one more book to do. So there's time.
Might throw it in there. Oh, wow.
There you go. We don't even expect credit. We'll just let you do your thing and glory at the art.
I'll throw money at it because I'm gonna have to. I got to complete the set.
You got to complete the set.
Yeah.
Okay. So, what made you choose Indiegogo over some of the other crowdfunding platforms that are out there?
Well, at the time, Kickstarter was gatekeeping against conservative creators. They had some people there that were doing some nasty shit. So I chose Indiegogo because it seemed the better of the two. And it was, but then the people that got fired at Kickstarter, eventually it probably ended up at Indiegogo when they started some of the same crap there. So my fans are used to going and using Indiegogo, but I'm not married to it. If I can find a better platform, I'll use it. But right now that's the one I choose.
Yeah. And a lot of conservative creators have great success on that platform.
So this is obviously the second volume. If people don't have the first, do they just get it with this one, or would you recommend them buying it directly from your website?
No, get it here. So that your books match up. There's a package deal. On the right hand side there's one with a sketch that's right at the front, but they have them without the sketches where you can just get the two books together.
That's the one I took.
Cool.
I was like, I get books one and two. Done. And then I saw that you had challenge coins, and I'm like, damn it, I gotta go back. And
so,
oh yeah, here it is right here.
Oh, hold on, let me put you full screen so we can see this. Give me just a second. Wow. Solo layout. Oh, that's kind of cool. Oh, look at
that. Yeah,
most these of them are really great. Any challenge coin I got.
Look at that. That's look at awesome. That. It's got gold on it.
Oh, it's got and some heft to it.
Oh yeah,
that's a big one.
Yeah, it's this. I think this is the 2-inch coin. Yeah. And it is heavy. This you drop this on a table.
Oops.
break a toe.
So is there any point in time to go full Jurassic Park on this and have them return again to Monster Island? You get book four?
Yeah, I mean, this will wrap up this part of the storyline, this trilogy that stars Mac and Duke. But the island's the island, and as I said, it goes all over the universe. So I could do stories of other creatures or other people going to the island, or just stuff that's happening on the island. So there's a lot of directions I can go with it after Escape.
You could probably do a prequel, I would think, like other humans that have visited that island throughout human history or something like that.
No, probably not. I'll probably go forward, not backward. Yeah. Right. I am doing a prequel to the Shenu, though. That nice. One's going to be called Shenu 77. I should call it Disco Shenu.
Definitely. Let's see here.
So, with the first three books, it's going to cover the same set of characters. It, potentially, if you go forward, would you want to return with those same characters, or would you want to introduce new people to the island?
Well, I think I think I would introduce new conflicts to the island and go in a different direction, you know, so that I could start with a brand new slate.
Well, that makes sense. From a story,
but all my books are connected. That's the one thing I've been doing with each one of them, is that they're all self-contained stories. So you could buy any one of them, read it, and enjoy it. But when you get them all, you'll start to see threads and Easter eggs and mentions and names that appear throughout, so that you realize this takes place in the same universe. And in the last book that I did, The Ghost of Metacumba Key, that's the book that ties it all together, where when you get to the end of that, you're going to know exactly how all this stuff is wrapped together in the same universe.
That's awesome.
Yeah, so it connects. It's going to connect the Shenu, Alien Alamo, Monster Island, and Joe Frankenstein all together.
Is it like blatantly obvious, you know, like, it's a shared universe like Marvel and DC, or is this like, oh, wait a minute, I saw that in the Shenu. You know, is it like that? With those, it's the Easter eggs that lets you know that it's a shared universe.
Yes.
Oh, that's
yes.
fun.
Yeah, it's like that. I'm, you know, there is some crossover stuff, but most of it is like they're separate, but there's you know they happen in the same universe. Like there's a sequence in the Shenu where this doubting Thomas is, you know, he's being told about this ancient creature called the Shenu, and he doesn't believe it. You know, he says, you know, a bunch of mumbo jumbo. And he says, I'll bet you believe that old chestnut about the kid and the monster living in the grain elevators. Cause both stories take place in Buffalo. And that reference about the grain elevators is directly to Joe Frankenstein. Cause Joe oh, wow. and the monster live in the grain elevators. So that's, you know, that's a little Easter egg for somebody. And then in Alien Alamo, at the end, the guy's reading on his iPad, and on the left-hand side under the news things, there's something about NASA denies island floating over the Bering Sea. Well, that's Return to Monster Island, you know.
Okay.
There's also one about Dr. Richards returns from test flight in space.
Little Fantastic Four reference
there. Dr. Richards and team return from test flight to space. little shout out to the Fantastic Four.
Oh, absolutely. That's awesome.
So are there other Easter eggs to other properties that you're just, you know, fans of in general that you throw in there for people to look for?
In these books, you mean like to Marvel and DC characters?
Right.
Yeah.
No, just that one to the FF that I mentioned. I'm not giving them any credit.
As well, you shouldn't.
Yeah.
Not anymore, anyway.
Yeah.
It's ruining my career. Ruining my favorites.
They destroyed those companies, so they can, you know, be hoisted on their own petards.
It said I barely even recognize books I grew up reading.
Yeah, exactly. I don't recognize any of these characters. We were just doing a show before I came on here. We're talking about, you know, Wonder Woman and Superman. We're getting a pedicure. A pedicure.
Wow.
Yeah. Superman.
Well, that's interesting. So we'll talk about something that's way cooler than that. We're going to talk about your comic. Do you have a favorite character in this book?
I always like drawing the girl characters. So, you know, Mac, the girl is my favorite to draw.
Is there something about her that makes her your favorite, or do you just in general from an aesthetic purpose?
Because she's a girl.
You sure you were in the infantry, sir?
I should have been.
You'd have fit right in.
I had a buddy, a buddy of mine was a Vietnam combat vet. He said to me one day, he goes, "You should have been a Marine." I said, "I'll take that."
It's a pretty good compliment.
It is. It was a. I took it very highly.
I'm gonna. You should have been an airborne ranger.
If John hadn't have been here, I'd have told you it was an insult. But since he's here, I'll be nice.
Mm-hmm.
Were you, you a Marine, John? Do you find?
Yeah.
Do you find it difficult to work outside of the crayon medium, or do you want to eat them most of the time as opposed to drawing them?
He's giving that special salute.
Oh yeah, my favorite.
So, do you plan on taking these universes that you create that all tie in together outside of the comic medium? Maybe do like a graphic novel, an extended book, or, you know, write actual.
These are graphic novels. I mean, they're all 72 to 80 pages. I might do I definitely will with Monster Island. There'll be an omnibus that'll collect them all together in hardcover. Okay. I'm going to do the same with Joe Frankenstein, because we're going to be doing multiple issues with that. And as far as other media goes, I don't seek it out. My focus is on the storytelling in comics. And if you know, anybody wants to do an animated series or a movie or a TV series about that, you know, they can contact me, but I'm not seeking it out.
I think Apple TV should get in on this because they just finished doing Monarch. You know, I think
that was really good. This would fit right into that kind of pastiche that they've got going on.
Well, yeah, this, the production companies that they use.
The original Monster Island was actually going to be optioned by DreamWorks. I had a call from an agent at CAA, and she said that she took the book to Steven Spielberg and had him read it in front of her. And when he was finished, he said, "We should have ended Jurassic Park 3 like this." He loved the ending.
Oh, wow.
Oh, yeah. That's awesome.
Yeah. That's so they, praise. You know, yeah, we were going to contract on it, you know, for the option. I talked to their attorneys. I told them that I wanted publishing rights, blah, blah, blah. Everything was cool. And then I waited a few days, didn't hear anything. I call back. I eventually get the guy and he says, "Yeah, it's a no-go." I go, "What happened?" He says, "Well, the guy who was, you know, running it, who was pushing it through, he got fired." And so everything goes when somebody is canned in Hollywood, because they don't want, if it becomes a success after he's gone, nobody wants to take a project that somebody else shepherded, you know, and have to split the credit with it. They're that petty. So everything goes on the desk that's on his desk with it. So unfortunately, that's what happened.
So when you draw, do you tend to have like actors or models or whatever in mind when you picture it to kind of help you create it, or do you just draw what's in your head and you don't really use?
It depends. You know, when I'm creating the characters, I think of types. Sometimes I cast them, when I came up with Joe from Joe Frankenstein, I clearly used Justin Long as the model for that character. Because I thought he was perfect. This one, Duke, the blonde haired guy, I actually modeled him after a friend of mine. And Mac was, the girl was modeled after, the Buzz Sawyer character, that I really liked. But yeah, sometimes I cast, you know, old actors as my facial models or body types.
I've done that a few times with my characters, and then they,
do you have like
my brain, they age out, which is weird. Like,
do you have like a voice in your head when you picture like what they might talk like or sound like to help you?
No, I don't, to be honest. When I hear people do voices of characters, I'm like, that's not what I hear. But then I don't really hear anything. It's just right. Like, I just know that it doesn't sound right when I hear it. It's weird.
So when you were drawing this Monster Island, do you have a favorite monster that you've drawn into this one?
Yeah, there's a monster called Horn Dog, who's actually going to make an appearance in Escape from Monster Island. He's not in any of these pages. He appears later on in the story. You know, fun Kirby style monsters, you know, big giant things with bulky,
powerful.
Can I just give you, I really appreciate that the color schemes that you use, the kind of subdued the way you did it. It works really well when you're colorblind. I can actually see the pictures. I can't always in some of the comic books Nick has had people on for. Oh my God. I assume there's a picture there, but my colorblind ass can't see it.
Gotcha.
So I really dig it.
I see any drawings. I sent him drawings with color on it. He's like, I don't know what's going on here. And I'm like, oh yeah, you're colorblind. Hold on. Let me start some things up real quick.
Well, if it's any consolation, I can't tell either half the time because the coloring is, there's no color theory. You know, they're just coloring everything and they're modeling everything. So everything is flattened. So you're not getting any sense of depth in the illustration. So everything flattens out and becomes on the same plane. And that's a real issue. The guy who did this, I think he did some nice separations between background, foreground, and middle ground. I think that's probably why you can see it as clearly as you can.
Yeah, I'm really digging it, man. I just keep staring at the pictures. So is there any package that has all of the other tie-in worlds like that you were mentioning that they're all in the same universe where you can just bundle and get all of it with this Kickstarter, or would they just get Monster Island 1 and have to go to your website?
Correct. Yeah. Yeah. You can get the two Monster Island books here, and then all the other books are available on the website with the exception of Ghosts of Matacumba Key. But that will be on there within probably a month. And we're done fulfilling.
So with those, do you do bundles on your website? I haven't checked your website out yet. I will when I prep the show notes, but is that something where you can like, I want everything you've ever written kind of thing, or?
No, it's just a simple, you add it to a cart.
So how do you get these printed? Do you go full Trollord Games and have like a printing press in your garage? Literally they do, or are you like outsourcing it?
Oh no, I use major printers.
It would have been cooler, sir, if you said, no, in my garage, I'm totally inking these myself.
I got a team of comic book elves that are in here running the press.
Ooh, that would be a good comic too, right? A comic book about comic book elves being forced into labor.
See, these are more like graphic novels because they're not stapled or what's called saddle stitched. You know, they're not style stitched like traditional floppy pamphlets. These are square bound with cardstock covers. There's coatings on the cover. There's spot UV on the cover. When you hold these comics, they feel completely different than anything you've ever held before that you thought was a comic.
Okay. I'm not totally sure the difference between all the different kinds. Nick tries to explain it to me, and I still mess it up.
It probably sounds like I'm speaking ancient Greek.
Sometimes I think you're making stuff up just to mess with me because you know I won't know any better.
That is fun.
That is also true.
Nick's the kind of
sometimes
guy that
I just like fucking with you.
Yeah, Nick would do the same thing. My sisters would trick me sometimes into wearing pink shirts at school because I couldn't tell.
Oh, that's cold.
So, like, Nick's the kind of guy that would do that to me, too.
Yeah, but I'd give you the out. You know, it's like, it's not pink, it's salmon.
And it's the 80s.
Oh, you got a plushie. You know, that's kind of cool.
I was checking that one.
Okay.
And this is the horror book, right?
The Chenu.
Okay.
Yeah.
I really like your art.
I get paid again, I will be ordering this.
Nice. There's the Chenu.
Right at the bottom.
Right.
Oh, yeah,
scroll right down. There you go.
There it is.
I'm scrolling down.
That is glorious, sir.
Oh my.
And you sell a beanie too. Okay. Do you incorporate your merch, your beanie into the comics just for a little bit of extra oomph?
I haven't yet. It wouldn't organically fit.
Yeah, so you gotta put it in a way.
You don't write certain things just to have merch opportunities?
No.
Like product placement?
It's all about the story.
Okay.
That's right.
That's a good place to be. That's probably why you're so much more successful than some of the other comics out there.
Could
I
be.
Would imagine.
That hurts, JR. That hurts.
I was more referring to the elephants in the room that, you know, would have you convinced that comics are dying, but we wanted to focus on his, so I was being vague.
Bad comics are dying.
Not what?
Bad comics are dying.
Yeah. Survival of the fittest, you know? You got an interesting story, you know, it'll either rise or fall based on its own merits, and I really like what's going on with Monster Island because it is a fun adventure comic.
So when you get your monsters for this island, are you pulling from myth and lore? Are you making any up yourself?
I make them all up. I'm doing, like I said, Jack Kirby monsters. Big, powerful things, you know, weird looking. I even incorporate, you're not a comic guy, so you probably don't remember the Jack Kirby monsters all had underwear on because it was part of the the comics code. You know, you can have have these like human looking type things without something covering the naughty bits. So I even have scenes where they're wearing their underwear and the humans are like, is that monster wearing underwear?
Then you got to beg the question, what kind of underwear are they wearing? Is it Fruit of the Loom? We're talking Hanes, Calvin Klein, what's going on here?
And who makes it?
So when did they get it?
Who is making these giant chonies for these monsters?
Right.
When did they stop making your artist types not follow like the comic code? When did that go away?
It was a slow death, but it finally went away in the early 1990s.
Okay. Well, I will say I never read comics much, but I did learn a very important lesson from a comic strip. I don't know if you remember Bazooka Joe, the bubble gum they sold at Little League Fields.
Oh, yeah.
They had one, and he's taking driver's ed, and the teacher asks him what to do if his brakes fail on the interstate, and the correct answer is stop putting the gas and slow yourself down and pull over. And his answer was hit something cheap. That's a valuable lesson because BMW, I'm avoiding the BMW, and I'm hitting the poor car. Sorry. So do you tend to teach moral lessons? I said that to ask this. Do you tend to try to teach moral lessons through your comics? Are they like allegories to larger ideas, or is it just fun for the sake of fun?
No, it's fun for the sake of fun. I mean, I deal with universal truths, but I'm not there to preach or to, get my messages across. I want message-free comics that focus strictly on entertainment.
Okay, that's a good goal. I read to escape, yeah. So I like it when authors give me that and don't preach at me.
Yeah, exactly right. You get tired of it. You turn on the TV, people are telling you, you know, this, that, and the other thing. And it's like, just shut up. Shut up and sing.
Yeah, I've said that even when I agreed with what they were preaching at me. For me, that's sort of agnostic to the message. I just don't want the message. I want to just, you know, the only politics or message that matters is if it pertains to the story in question. That's it.
Exactly right. Right. If it's germane to the story to bring that out in the character, then all bets are off. But if you are the author talking through the character, then fuck you, you know.
Yeah.
And that's the problem with a lot of these guys that are writing for Marvel and DC. They're not writing the characters. They're self-insertions. They're writing themselves as these characters, and there's no editors that are challenging them to say, hey, this isn't right. This isn't on model. This isn't the way this character would say or talk or do something. You know, this is you. Stop writing you. You're boring.
Yeah. If you're doing it right, yeah. Even when you write opinions you disagree with, they should be absolutely convinced you think that because you were so convincing with it.
When you have your characters.
When your characters, you know, if you got to be so convincing, people would think, oh, he must believe that or she must believe that. Then, you know, you've done it right.
Mm-hmm. Particularly if it's not what you believe.
Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I've written that you see that a lot when people do their bad guys too well and everyone suddenly assumes, oh, this creator is a bad guy. He supports bad thing because you did such a good job. At making the bad guy bad.
Mm-hmm.
It always gives you write an interesting character.
Well, most people spend so much time writing the bad guy that you get people that, you know, that's why everyone's Team Vader. The joke is because they spend so much time writing him that in some ways, some of the other stuff didn't get as much attention. That happens as a general rule when people focus on the bad guy. And so you end up rooting for them because that's the one you know the most about.
Yeah. And he's probably the most interesting of them too.
Yeah. Usually, but interesting. Your bad guy is what's going to make the hero, you know? So he's got to be as equally as interesting as the hero, or a lot of times even better, more interesting than the hero, because you're like, oh, why is this guy like that?
Right.
So you have book 3 kind of planned out. How far do you see this going into the future as far as books and Monster Island?
Oh, it's hard to say because once I get done with this, I'll be working on the Xenu prequel. And then I have the third Joe Frankenstein installment. So because the Xenu and Monster Island, I write and draw it. I do everything on it. They take a long time to complete. So and I like bouncing around to different things. As I get tired of working on one thing for a long time, I can go off to something else and start something fresh. And the artwork is fresh and the story is fresh, you know, because I'm using different muscles to tell it. Then I can revisit it later on and do more, you know. But I've got a lot on the publishing plate right now. So right now the goal is to get the third one out and then move on to some other things and then revisit it later.
So do you ever write from the monster's POV, or is it always from the people trapped on the island?
Well, so far it's been from the people on the island, but it's not to say that I couldn't do that later on.
Okay. When it comes to monsters, there's a trend on some ends. They try to keep it as off screen as possible to build the suspense and make it scarier. And the others, they show you all of it right away. Do you have a preferred approach when it comes to dealing with the bads?
Depends on the type of story I'm trying to tell. With the Xenu, there's a lot of stuff where we don't see the monster, especially in the beginning. And it's terrifying. A guy's head will just come flying off, you know, and you'll just see the swoosh of a claw, you know, and he's you're blinded by the blizzard that he's in. So you don't see it.
Quality entertainment.
Yeah. But then when you're doing stuff like Godzilla or, you know, giant monsters like Monster Island, you know, that's the money. You want to see the monster, you know. So those, you know, are less nuanced. You know, it's like, you know, bam, there's the monster.
Okay. At any plans on the future of having like action figures, more plushies or whatever of the various creatures you're putting on the island? To decorate your office with, of course. Not to play with.
No, that's a lot of work. Just getting that plushie took a year and a half to get
completed.
Oh, man.
From design to production and all that kind of stuff. If I had to do like PVC figures or something like that, for one thing, you got to deal with China. I don't like dealing with that. I try to do everything in the U.S. from all my source stuff. Even like these challenge coins, you know, I found a company in the U.S., but then when they got shipped to me, I found out they shipped them from China. I was pissed. But my shirts are all made in the USA. The plushie is, you know, it's the materials were sourced in China, but they were manufactured here in the U.S. so I can put a made in the USA label on it. But my printing is all done here in the U.S. I try to keep everything here in country because I think it's important to keep the jobs here.
Oh, absolutely.
I agree, and I appreciate that. All right, so
American made.
Right now, this has 5 days left. I'm going to air this as soon as we get off. I'll track down all your social media links, and we'll just go ahead and air this today. Take that, Chuck. You snooze, you lose, and so he's taking your spot, and we're pushing you back a day.
That's it, Chuckles.
But was there anything
we that just won Chuck Dixon? That's awesome.
You snooze, you lose, right? So was there anything
going in my journal tonight?
Is there anything about this Return to Monster Island that you wanted to tell us that we haven't asked? Because we've kind of been all over the place with it.
Oh no, I think we covered it from soup to nuts.
That is not an expression I've heard before, but I'm going to steal that and write it down for later. So I appreciate that.
You never heard that? How long were you in the infantry? You never heard from soup to nuts?
No. I heard
soup to nuts. Top five NCO sayings.
Clearly, we had different NCOs. Mine was a nom vet who put in his 30 years in the Army, said, no, you're not done yet. So I heard a lot of, this dog won't hunt, and it would behoove you. You knew you're in trouble if they said it would behoove you, because that's when shit's about to get real.
Behoove you. Better drop some wisdom on you.
Yeah, that's usually the equivalent of needing to pull your head out of your ass.
Or your mom calling all three names.
Yeah.
No. So obviously we will link to the Kickstarter. We did not air a commercial break, dear listener, if you caught that. Because
Indiegogo, Jim.
Yes, because the Indiegogo funding is our sponsor today. We want you to go and back his campaign and indulge in all the monstrous goodness. Or badness, whatever. Monsters are cool. So
support independent comics. That's the whole key. Support the independents.
That's right.
Absolutely. So how can listeners and viewers at home find you on the Wild Wild interwebs? And then we'll link to all that in the show notes.
Sure. I'm on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. I have a YouTube channel. It's Nolanverse CC on YouTube. And then, of course, CompassComics.com is my company website.
Okay. You make it really easy for me. I will track all those down. And John has been so in awe. He's just been kind of taking it all in. He's a strong silent type. Mostly when they sucked his soul, they took his tongue, I think, when they made him a ginger. But John,
my ex-wife got that in a divorce, too.
So how can listeners and viewers find you at home?
I'm Seclusion Studios on all the main social media sites. And I'm doing a book called Exodus Z right now. I'm on page 8 of issue number 2. So things are coming along pretty nicely on that.
All right. So how many pages are you doing a day, John?
Right now I'm doing it in between my regular job too. So it takes me 2-3 days to get a page done.
What's your average, Graham? I bet you're doing like 100 pages a day, aren't you? Something crazy.
I wish. My pages when I was, you know, penciling for Marvel and DC, it was like about 2 pages a day. But now with, you know, because I'm writing it, illustrating it, and all the other aspects of self-publishing, they have to do, you know, live streaming, merchandise, or getting the word out, all that kind of stuff takes a lot of extra hours in the day. So, you know, here it is 10:30 at night. I'm still at work, you know, I'm not at the board drawing, but, you know, so it does take a lot longer. And because it's crowdfunded, you know, you try to give the readers the best that they can get. They can buy shit from Marvel or DC easy, you know, but I want to give them the best art that I can. So it takes me longer. You know, if I was actually to sit down and work a full 8 hour day, I could pencil and ink a page a day. But I just can't do that, you know.
So do you draw the and write it at the same time, or do you tend to write the story and then draw the art after?
I write the story first, at least in a structure. And then, you know, part of the creative process when you're a writer artist is the evolution as you're going through it. You can change things. You can, this is a better way to tell that narrative. Or I think of a better piece of dialogue or exposition to fill in the reader with more information or something like that. So I'm always tweaking and, you know, changing things as I go along the process. But the basic plot and storyline is pretty much locked down ahead of time.
Okay. Well, with that being said, we do appreciate you coming on. You can find us on our Linktree, linktr.ee, Linktree/Blasters and Blades Podcast, where we link to all the things, the bit shoots, the rumbles, the YouTubes, the Twitters. We have our email, blastersandbladespodcast@gmail.com, for professional purposes only. We have our Facebook group and Facebook page. And more importantly, we link to Madam Stabby Stab's Instagram, Twitter, and email. And for some reason, Nick, I think fans like her more than they do us, and that's a problem.
Yeah, it's because she's pretty.
That does help. That does help. All right. We have our website at anchor.fm/blasters-and-blades. Again, anchor.fm/blasters-and-blades, where for as little as 99 cents a month, you can help keep the lights on. Every penny helps, and we greatly appreciate it. You can support the show more directly over at buymeacoffee.com/author J.R. Handley. Again, buymeacoffee.com/author J.R. Handley. Be sure to put in the comment section of this for the podcast, and I will keep my co-host, Nick Garber and Stabby McStabstab, duly caffeinated. They will drink until coffee brand coffee runs out of American-made coffee. And I don't know that that's possible. Before I do the wrap-up bit, Nolan, you have to know, right as we were interviewing, I shared your Kickstarter, or excuse me, your Indiegogo, and one of our followers said, you really should interview Graham Nolan. He's a lot of fun. All right.
You should mention that.
Yeah. Thank you for spending some of your precious time with us. For my crazy co-host, I am J.R. Handley, and this was the Blasters and Blades Podcast. We'll be back next week at the same time, where we'll indulge our love of nerd culture, cheesy jokes, and all things that go boom. We really appreciate you coming on, Graham. This was a lot of fun.
Thank you guys for having me.
And we should get you on for some more. We're planning on more panels on comics and stuff, so we definitely want you to come back for those, because I have nothing to say about those. I know nothing.
Okay.
All right. Thank you. And with that, boom.